This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Philippe Rahm is an architect at Philippe Rahm Architects based in Paris and is also a visiting professor at Harvard University's Graduate School of Design. His work, which is described as extending the field of architecture from the physiological to the meteorological, will be the topic of tonight's installment of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia's public lecture series called Constructed Atmospheres, which is taking place at 7:15 in the evening at the White Box in Publica. So let's start then with the title of your lecture. What are constructed atmospheres?
Constructed atmosphere, I think it's the basic idea of architecture. Because why we need architecture? It's because the fundamental idea is because it's when there is rain outside, or when it's too warm outside, or too many light outside. So you need to create shadow, you need to create a place without rain and where it could be colder. So what we are doing as an architect, you are building climate. You are building a special weather, a special pocket of weather where you could have another climate than the uncomfortable climate than outside. So this is why I think the idea of to build atmosphere, to build climate, is in reality the real target for architecture.
So then how does that incorporate physiology and meteorology into architecture?
I think if you have to build climate, there is two scale for that. The first scale is the human scale, because the body is, we say, the scientific people say that to be comfortable, there is something, a range of temperature that could start at 21 degrees Celsius until 31 degrees Celsius. So this is okay for the body. If the temperature outside is not higher than 31 degrees Celsius, it's okay. But when it's become more hot, the body start to do some what we call thermolysis. So it's you start to sweat, to have some different physiological reaction. And the same for in the cold country, when it's become lower, you can start to freeze, to shiver, to have some physiological answer. So I think architecture has something to do with the physiology of the body, and maybe we could think that it's not only this is not only a scientific target, it's also a poetic target. You could think that there is some different things, different quality of things to do with different way to receive, to perceive the by the body, to perceive the climate. And then the idea of meteorological architecture is to, because if we have to build climate, we could build it by using the weather instrument, the weather tool. So it's the basic idea of my work. It's to use like meteorological phenomena, like convection, evaporation, conduction, radiation, like tools for composing architecture plan and section and building.
In other words, then, where you are building really matters, because you have to think about the specific climate and weather of the site. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. You have to think about the if this is a more dry and cold climate, or more humid and hot climate. So from where comes the wind? If it is a colder wind, or if you could use the movement of the air, what is the opening of the sky? If it is a cloudy climate, and so you have to think about that. And all these things is linked to sustainability, because I think we are in a different moment. During the modernity, during the 20th century, the solution was only to have air conditioning in warm country and to have a radiator in the cold country. So you use a lot of energy by using this type of things. But today, I think because we have the problem of the global warming, of the climate change, so we have to think about very carefully about how to use air conditioning, how to use a radiator and heating system. And so it changed, because, for example, we need need, I think, in the building also in Malaysia, it will be good to have a bigger thermal insulation, you know, to have not only a thin line of wall, but to have like 20 centimeter or 40 30 centimeter of thermal insulation around the building. And so in this way, you could economize a lot of energy. You could do a lot of money economy because you reduce the quantity of heat, quantity of energy you will use for air conditioning. So I think it's a new way of perceiving architecture. And of course, it changed also the language of architecture, the way to design architecture.
So is this something then that's been built into architecture as it's taught, or is it something that's really coming to the fore now?
I think it's the fact to use the climate was before the modernity. It was something very common, you know. In the, for example, in the warm country, we use the wind to cool. You know, the old traditional house were built like a little in order to let the wind going inside the room and to cool, or using the water, for example, like a fountain or a river or something that create a mist that could cool the temperature of the air. So all this traditional way of doing was before the modernity it was used. And then I think there is this very special moment of the modernity where everybody don't care about that, you know, just putting a machine inside in the building. And today it changed, and I think we really have to rethink the way to design the space according to climate. And we could find new quality, new aesthetic in that. So it is my target in architecture. It's not just to be a technician, but also to invent new aesthetic, to invent new way of living, new architectural quality.
How long does it take people to adapt to a new aesthetic? Because we're talking about places that people will occupy, right? Whether it's as their homes or as their offices or even as their hospitals, their public spaces. How long does it take people to recognize that this is happening, that there is an aesthetic shift?
It's a good question. I think it's, you know, for me, for example, I start like 15, 20 years ago to think about these things. And at the beginning, it was a little, I was a little alone in this type of research. And then I understand that, for example, the industrial company, like the lighting industry or, you know, the heating industry, they are starting now to integrate all these things. For example, for the light, it's you know, this physiological approach. For example, what type of light, what kind of spectrum of light you use. You know, they are today the big company are using this type of things in order to produce lighting, and so I think it could change quickly. You know, it's already changed because we are doing some project now in different country where they ask us, you know, to do some sustainable building with a new aesthetic. And so I think it's something we are working in Taiwan, for example, for one park there, and or in Doha, in the Qatar, we have also some the beginning of one important project there, and they are looking from us. They are looking for, you know, green architecture, but with new quality, new value, new architectural value.
Did climate change force you, or, you know, force you into adopting this philosophy? And did it factor into your thought process, you know, 15, 20 years ago when you first thought, okay, this is something that I'd like to look into?
I have to say that at the beginning, it was not linked to sustainability. My idea for architecture was to say why architects always talk about the solid element, about the facade, about the wall, about these things. Because as an architect, you don't design, you are not a sculptor. You are not designing the solid. You have to design the space, the void, the emptiness. This is what we are doing, really. And so it for, at the beginning, it starts like this. It starts like changing the old target of architecture to design the solid and say, okay, we will design the space, so we will design the light, the heat, the humidity of the air, the quality of the air. And so This was the original target in my work, and then it fits very conveniently with a sustainability requirement, because all the sustainability is about energy saving, about how to have a good air conditioning or good ventilation, good way of heating. So it's based on also on this all invisible parameter and void quality of space.
At this point in time, is the building industry as a whole moving towards sustainability?
I think yes. I think it's. I think, for example, in France, you know, today this is a main target for the new government. You know, the new government understand that if France want to go in the future, they have to what they call to change the energy. You know, this is a change of energy moment, so we have to change from nuclear, from oil burning to sustainable energy. And this moment become in the French government becomes the most important target. So there is an important summit at the end of the year in France with this COP symposium and about climate change with all the president of the different country of the world that will come here. And I think it's today it's everywhere. I think it's something that is becoming the most important target.
I'm speaking today with Philippe Ram, architect from Philippe Ram Architects, and here as part of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia's public lecture series, we are discussing constructed atmospheres. Up next, we find out more examples of how buildings can be insulated from heat, very important here in Malaysia. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, joined by Philippe Ram, architect at Philippe Ram Architects. We are discussing constructed atmospheres. So earlier, I mean, one thing that interested me when you were talking about the different projects that you have around the world is you mentioned, I think, Taiwan, and then in the next breath you said Doha, was it? And those are two just completely different climates. It's hard to imagine climates that it could be more different. So does that mean then that you're not able to kind of create templates as such that you'd be able to kind of take from country to country? Every new country or every new project is an entirely different challenge?
In reality, it's a different challenge, but it's the same tools. It's the same way to think about the project. I think it's depend of the type of temperature, of the type of humidity, of light. But for example, in Taiwan, it's a humid and dry and humid and warm and polluted city. It's in Taichung, so we propose to deal on these three targets, on these three layers, like how to cool, how to dry the air, how to depolluting the air. And we are doing a park of 70 hectares there. It was an international competition we have won 4 years ago. It's under construction since 1 year now. And all the master plan is based on that. So it means we do what we call a computer software model, fluid dynamic studies, to understand where it could be a little colder inside the park. And then we reinforce that by adding trees, a lot of trees that could be cooled the space, and also some green furniture that will use geothermal cooling, so the air, the warm air, will go underground 5 meters down inside underground ducts. And so in the underground, because the temperature is always around 25 degrees Celsius, so when it's 40 degrees outside, so it will be cool and the air will go out with some devices, and with a temperature that will be, you know, lower, like 25 to 29 degrees. So we will create some fresh air fountain inside the park. So this is the idea, and of course we work in the same way for the pollution, for the dry thing. And in Doha, in the Qatar, it's different because it's very dry. So and there is of course a lot of light, and so we deal on also on different layers. But the first layer is about it's for a museum, for a new museum, for Arab modern art museum, And we work on the light quality and how to reduce it by filtering different wavelengths. And for example, we know that, you know, the white light of the sun is composed by visible light and also infrared light, and heat come 50% of the heat of the sun come from the infrared, and inside the visible, for example, the blue light is more powerful than the violet one. So we try to filtering some different type of light and recomposing after in order to reduce the quantity of heat of the white light that will come inside the building. So this is a way of cooling the interior by filtering certain type of wavelength that bring some heat inside the building.
So with all these different options, with all these different projects then, and with that example that you mentioned earlier for Malaysia, where we could just be building our walls thicker, for example, can these ideas be retrofitted into existing structures and buildings? So looking at the studio that we're sitting in, for example, this building, this room, would you be able to say, okay, well, let's do it like this without having to strip everything down?
Yeah, I think the first things to do is really to increase thermal insulation, you know, and because the wall is very thin here, you know. So it means that the heat comes from outside and goes through the wall, so you have to turn on more and more the air conditioning in order to reduce the transmission of heat coming from the wall. So if you just place like 10 centimeters of thermal insulation or more, you know, you could reduce a lot the electricity, and at the end of the day, you will economize a lot of money, you know, because it's... So I think this is something very simple, but after... You could say, okay, this room maybe have to be very well insulated, but this one could be a little less because you are just it's just for the material, just for storage, or this one could
or
be
it's just a hallway.
Exactly. So you could start to imagine, or you could also decide the type of material, you know, if it is a material that absorb the heat, or you know, that have a thermal inertia, so like stone or concrete, or some of them could be wood, or you know, you could decide. The color, for example, also the color, if it is white or more dark. So you could decide if it will transform the light into heat or not. So you could do some decision like this in order to economize money and energy and to fight against global warming, and also to rethink the aesthetic inside. And this is something that is always together.
Where have you found the most progressively green or sustainable architecture?
I think it's because I'm Swiss. I'm a Swiss architect, and I'm living in Paris since 10 years now. But I think it's Switzerland. You know, it was very avant-garde about that. Because it's a cold country, so there is a lot of research about how to save energy in Switzerland. So it was. I have to say that it starts in Switzerland or in Germany, and then it goes in France, in the other country, and now it's go everywhere. But of course, there is also a green label in Nadia. There is also some label also in the US. But I think the question, I think today it's something that everybody understand, and everybody want to go in this direction.
Why did you decide to be based in Paris, you know, in the last decade?
Because I like Paris. I think it's a beautiful and a very nice city, and also it was also at one moment I start to have some more work in France, and so I decide to move my office there, and I travel a lot because I teach in the US, or I have this project in Taiwan, and so it's in reality it's a good place to be. And for example, we just finished one project for Paris. And because it was for old building of the, you know, like 300 years old building, or 400 years building, in very touristic place in the center of Paris. And we try to, exactly the same question you asked me, how to change, how to adapt this old building to the new requirement for energy saving and sustainability. And we rethink about how to change the thermal insulation inside or to choose a material, and it creates a new way of new decoration art. So because, you know, for example, I don't know, but the Marie Antoinette decoration style or the Louis XV decoration style or like Art Deco, all this style of decoration, old style and a new style. So I think today we could reinvent a kind of indoor new style of aesthetic according to, you know, how to reduce the energy and to have more thermal insulation inside or to change the material of the ground. So it's creates a new design style.
When you mention things like Marie Antoinette and Louis XV, they're very distinctly French styles, very distinctly French aesthetics. So when you take on a project in a foreign country, how much emphasis do you place on incorporating that country's history of culture and design?
I have to say that when I talk about that, it's always about culture. It's always to go deeper than the first image, you know, to understand, for example, when I talk Marie Antoinette style, you understand that why there is some carpet or mirror or wood on the wall, it was not only for decoration, it was for thermal reason, you know, the carpet, it was something to cut the conductivity, the cold, the coldness that come from the ground, and so they put a carpet in order to create a thermal insulation, or the same with the mirror, because it was too dark inside the space, so they amplify the light by adding mirror and light, beautiful light, you know. So all these things, you have to go beyond the first image and to understand what were the real idea of that. And so it's what I'm doing when I'm working in foreign country. You know, I don't want to do repetition of decoration things. I want to go beyond and to understand the reality, what it was like this at the beginning, and to understand the fundamental reason. And and for me, it's I never want to be you know, like a designer, like a decorative designer. I always want to find a real reason for doing something.
Function.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
You also often refer to German philosopher Peter Sloterdijk and French anthropologist Bruno Latour when talking about your work. Could you talk to us about their ideas and how they're relevant to architecture and the architecture that you practice?
I think Peter Sloterdijk, this German philosopher, was really important because he changed he introduced the idea of climate, of what he called a sphere or bubble. He said that that today the most important thing is to define, to build atmosphere, because he say in reality everywhere, you know, when you are in the world, in the taxi, in this studio, you are building atmosphere, and this is what is the quality of atmosphere. And also there is a fundamental idea, Bruno Latour talk about that too, it's that before, the human was in front of the object, you know, it was like the object was not you was in front of the object, and today the object is no more in front of you. It's you are inside the object. So it means, for example, if you, I could give a very simple example of that. But if you have a baby bottle, for example, in plastic, you know, the bottle is in front of the baby. But when he drink, maybe it's some chemical particle of the bottle could go inside the baby and change, you know, create some disease or something, you know. So it's why there is no more a separation between the object and you, or between the air and you, or the light and you. Everything is connected. For example, we are inside a certain quality of air. We have inside the quality of the light. So and this light have an effect on our body, on the physic, on our health. So it means everything is connected. So this is the idea of Bruno Latour. This idea that we are no more, there are no more a gap between human and the world, but we are inside the world. We are part of the world. We are breathing the world. We are drinking the world. We are drinking the object or breathing the object.
When you incorporate these principles into your work, I guess the question that comes to mind for me is, how much do we fight against the existing atmosphere? You know, while we're trying to create our own internal, not private, but while we're trying to create our own livable atmospheres, how much do we fight with what's actually happening outside? For example, right now it looks like it's going to pour.
Yeah.
You know, do we just live with that or do we fight against it?
I think we have to do something in between. So it's a little complicated. But for example, sometimes if you it's true that if you have a very well insulated place, so you will economize money. So you will be separate from the nature from outside. But in reality, you save the nature because you economize the energy burning, and so you reduce the global warming. So it means it could be contradictory because you are you built a bubble, like a completely separate bubble, but in reality, this bubble is good for the nature. So, you know, you could think the opposite. You could think that creating a bubble is not good because you are separate from the nature. But in reality, if you have a thin wall without thermal insulation, you eat too many energy and then you create global warming. So it means sometimes what we think is not the reality. So we have to really to be careful to understand really the relation between nature and human, and not to think that that the simple idea is the reality. So, but of course, me, I always try to incorporate the natural parameter. For example, in the park in Taiwan, we integrate the north wind, the cooling effect of the wind, also the water evaporation, you know, all these natural phenomena without air conditioning, or the geothermal cooling, as I said, the air that go underground. So all this green way of cooling that could be used without using air conditioning or machine.
If you were to build a park or an apartment building here in town, in Malaysia, how would you go about it?
I would love. I think it's true that I think the relation between the exterior climate and the interior climate will be a very interesting challenge. Also, because yesterday, for example, I was in outside, you know, on a balcony, and the climate was perfect. So I think we must understand when the climate is too high, when it's too cold, and also use, for example, you know, during the night there is a cooling effect by radiation, and because a cold night is and the night vault is cold and it sucks the energy, the heat of the ground. So how to use this cooling effect from the night and to move it into the day when it's too warm, and so it's I think it's it will be something like that to in order to bring climatic quality inside the building and reducing air conditioning.
You mentioned your travels earlier, part of which is over to Harvard. What do you teach there?
I teach a studio, a design studio of architecture, so it's in master degree, and it's I teach this constructed atmosphere idea. So we work with a student, we analyze meteorological phenomena like conduction, convection, evaporation, and we like ventilation, all this technical lighting, and then we try to be very good and to understand very precisely in a scientific way what it is today, and then from that it give a new possibility for imagination to redesign things. And because if you don't know exactly how work an air conditioning machine, you could not redesign it. So by really understanding everything, you could say, okay, maybe if I do like this, it will be better. Or if I change the position of this, or if I enlarge this, you could change the way of thinking about the project. And this is what we are doing. So they are analyzing meteorological phenomena and then starting to design project based on climate and in order to do sustainable building.
At the moment then, how do you divide your time between academic work and architectural projects?
It's like I go every 2 weeks in Harvard during the one semester. So it's like It's like 1-2 days every week. 1 day, 2 days. Like 1 day every week. I'm in the academic process, and the rest of the day, I'm working in my office. Yes.
If you'd like to hear more about constructed atmospheres, Philippe will be speaking tonight at tonight's installment of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia's public lecture series. That's happening again this evening, 7:15, at the White Box in Publica. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Philippe Ram, architect, on the subject of constructed atmospheres here on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.